Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the program this morning, we'll be talking with someone who is said to be one of the most influential business leaders in Russia today. His name is Alexei Novikov, and he is the managing director of Standard & Poor's Moscow office for Russia and the CIS. And in that capacity, he coordinates all of their business activities, including credit ratings and index services. He also serves as a senior spokesperson representing the company in the local market. He also frequently contributes his commentary to print and electronic media. He's here visiting the campus. His visit is sponsored by the folks at the Russian, East European, and Eurasian Center. And he'll be giving a talk on the topic, Russia, 10 years after default, new risks emerge. This takes place this afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Levis Faculty Center on the campus. And, of course, anyone who is here in and around Champaign-Urbana who would be interested in hearing from him should feel welcome to attend. Just a little bit more about him. Before he went to work for Standard & Poor's, he headed EA Ratings. That was Russia's first independent credit rating agency. He also managed a multi-year technical assistance contract with the World Bank in the area of Russian regional fiscal reform. In the 90s, he was consultant to the Analytical Center for the President of the Russian Federation in the area of fiscal federalism. He also was an economics advisor and speechwriter for President Boris Yeltsin. He has a doctoral degree from the Russian Academy of Sciences and master's degree from Moscow State University in country and regional studies, and he does occasionally still teach economics courses there. We're pleased that he could be with us to spend some time talking, and of course, questions are welcome. We just ask people who are calling in to try and be brief, but of course, your questions are certainly welcome. Questions and comments are welcome. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much, David. And I definitely should stress that I am not the most influential business leader in Russia. Definitely, we have many of those.
I'm sure that you're among the more influential business leaders in Russia. Well, thank you very much for being here. The place that I'd like to start is to have you talk about the way in which Russia has been touched by the global economic crisis that we have going. Certainly, it was, I think people would argue, that it was touched off by events and conditions in the United States, but certainly many other countries have been affected. So, specifically, how has Russia been affected?
Well, Russia definitely was affected. And, well, if you look back 10 years ago, there was a crisis, you know, well, 1998 default. I remember this time that was really awful. And since that time, Russia progressed tremendously and actually reached fantastic level of financial and fiscal stability. However, if you look at the drivers of the Russian economic growth, so you can find that, well, two of those, like... first of all, the oil price, right? It's going down. And the second one, which was really strong, especially last year and the year before, domestic consumption, the growth of domestic consumption, the domestic demand. Well, they are going down now because the credit is becoming more expensive. So, well, the Russian domestic consumption is being fueled by the foreign borrowing. And foreign borrowing now is really expensive. It's unquestionable. So, well, the Russian government now finds itself in a very difficult situation because, well, key advantages are no longer there. So they have to figure out something. What they've done very good over the past 10 years, they accumulated fantastic amount of reserves. They put together. A very conservative fiscal policy, created stabilization fund. Now it is split between the reserve fund and a future generation fund. It's while the all together, all these funds and reserves, they represent probably $500 billion. It helps Russian government to tackle liquidity crisis in the banking system through the injections of money into the banking system. However, well, you can think about Russia as financially very stable at the moment, but this is because of very low debt burden and really huge reserves. But you have to be very careful spending those reserves, because, well, you have to have enough money to spend for at least 2 years or 3 years, because it's not going to be over. I mean, the crisis is not going to be over. So,
well, it's my understanding that, in fact, already the government has had to dip significantly into its cash reserves just for the very reasons that you cite, and that they have been drawn down. So it's not that there isn't a lot of money still there, but they have been drawn down very significantly.
Absolutely, and that was one of the reasons why we put negative, I mean, as Standard & Poor's that I represent, put negative outlook on Russian rating, which is still very high. It's BBB+, it's investment grade, but Russia spent probably 15% of the whole reserve amount just in 1 month. So, and to tackle the liquidity crisis in the banking system, and actually to prevent deposit runs on banks. Exactly. So, well, you have to be very careful with this, even if you have this kind of money and the really low debt.
Yeah, one of the things that has happened is, and it certainly happened other places as well, is significant decline in the Russian stock market. And there have been times when the government has been concerned enough so that they've actually stopped trading, and that they've also intervened to the extent to try to smooth out big swings one way or another. But the Russian market has lost 70%.
70%.
This, I'm sure, must concern the government. Is there something that they can do about that?
You're absolutely right. So Russian government is concerned about that. And there are several reasons for that. The first reason that, well, if you look at the decline of the stock markets in other emerging markets, like China, India, so, well, they've lost probably 50%. Some of them 55, 60, but not 70%. So Russia actually was the worst among the emerging markets, especially BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China. If you look at the performance of the Russian stock market over 5 years, so try to analyze the earnings and the performance, it's going to be minus 5%, and all other markets performed much better. So Russia lost a tremendous amount of value, Russian stock market, tremendous amount of value over the last year, and partially because of the general economic situation in the world, because non-residents were trying to get money out of Russia to pay their debts in Europe and in America. But also, investment climate in Russia is still very poor. And so we've heard about number of corporate scandals, like metallurgical company Mitchell was accused by Mr. Putin, and so, well, scared a lot of investors. Also, Georgia crisis and Georgia conflict scared out a lot of investors, because, well, they thought America would place some sort of sanctions on Russia and Europe as well. So it didn't happen, but anyway, investors got scared and put money and got money out of Russia. So Russia lost more than other emerging markets. The other reason why Russian government is really concerned about that. So, well, Russian government actually was trying to advertise so-called people's IPOs. Well, maybe I don't know if you know what does it mean, but the state-owned company Rosneft, a huge company, announced an IPO several years ago, and trying to sell stocks, shares, to retail consumers. The government actually advertised that, saying that this is going to be a very good thing for ordinary people to buy shares of those companies like Rosneft, State Bank, VTB, et cetera. But now they're actually in decline, and so they've lost a lot of value, and people are actually frustrated about that. So, so does the Russian government. And some people in the Russian government come up with some crazy idea to actually inject some state money, taxpayers' money, and buy those shares to inflate their value. But hopefully it will not happen. So, the economic and financial bloc of the Russian government is still very conservative and, smart. So, I hope they would prevent that. But anyway, it's also political, not just purely economical and financial.
The strategy now that it seems that the United States is taking, following the lead of Britain, after initially talking about doing something different, would be to try to look at key financial institutions and actually to put U.S. government money in them and in exchange take a position, get stock. Mm-hmm. And that was something that they, a policy that they adopted after initially talking about buying up bad loans. And I think truly that it was because Gordon Brown, the British Prime Minister and former Chancellor of the Exchequer, mm-hmm. Said, "No, we're going to do something different. That we're mm-hmm. going to do this." And then after making that announcement, the United States said, "Well, okay, maybe we will do that too." Is the Russian government thinking about, or have they already done something like that?
Yes, they are thinking about that, and actually, the British case is fortunately is becoming one of the most popular among Russian political leaders because, the British case is very clever, actually. They inject money into the capital, but they buy preferred stocks, so the stocks that wouldn't allow government to vote and to make decisions about those financial institutions that they are trying to save. And this is a very good and clever policy with regards to Russia. I think if Russian government continues to do so, injecting money, saving institutions without influencing their decision-making mm-hmm. process, it's so-called soft nationalization for some time. That would be great, actually, because some institutions really need this. In the situation of financial crisis, if you help those institutions, do you help the general public anyway?
Our guest this morning is Alexey Novikov. He's managing director of Standard & Poor's Moscow office for Russia and the CIS, has been somebody who has been involved with and looking at and following the Russian economy now for some time. He is here visiting the campus. We'll give a talk this afternoon about the Russian economy. And here on the program, questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. The president, Mr. Medvedev, gave his first I guess it's sort of the equivalent mm-hmm. of the State of the Union or the State of the Nation speech. Mm-hmm. It's an annual thing that the Russian president gives. And it's gotten quite a lot of attention for remarks he's made that have to do with security and with relations between the U.S. and the United States. And he said something that apparently he had said before, and that was a criticism of the United States and how it managed its own economy, essentially saying this now global financial crisis we have, this is the fault of the United States. And he, for example, said inflating the cash bubble to stimulate their own growth, that is, of the United States. They not only made no effort to coordinate their actions with the other participants in global markets, but also neglected the elementary sense of proportion and did not listen to repeated warnings from their partners. And I'm sure that this is not the first time he said something mm-hmm. something like that. Is that, in fact, is this whole thing really, do you think, the fault of the United States and the United States government?
Well, definitely not. I think, this is the global problem. This problem was a shock to many countries, including the United States, Europe, Russia, all most influential players in the global economy. So I don't think this is the U.S. Fault. Probably this statement was done for the domestic consumption more than for international audience. It happens from time to time. I mean, global economy, market economy gets into crisis, and that's this is probably one of the biggest crises, and definitely caused by enormous excessive liquidity and I should say, well, some financial institution may have lost a control and sense of reality. Yeah, that's right. But not just in the United States, everywhere, I think. And in Russia, you saw a so-called Dutch disease situation when a lot of liquidity was pumped into the real estate sector. So you see fantastic real estate boom in Russia. But it's going to be bubble mm-hmm. as well. So and also in 1998. So well, that was one of the probably mostly known bubbles in the world. I mean, the Russian GKO said that this is the type of security that Russian government issued and traded at 200% at that time. So well, that happens, and I'm not sure this is the U.S. default. Mm-hmm.
We have a caller here. Others are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. First up here, someone here where we are in Champaign County. It's line one. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a couple of things, and one of them is sort of generally, well, it's sort of an anecdote, and I'd heard it on the BBC that certain regions of Germany are barring real estate purchases by Russians. And they're claiming it's because many of the oligarchs are gangsters, and I guess that's demonstrably true, but I don't know how they actually managed to do that. One place that, just an irony, one place where they are allowed to buy property is Baden-Baden, which is the old summer or winter redoubt of the Tsars. So we have this image of, or I have this image of the Russian oligarchs and gangsters buying the old historic buildings that were constructed for the Tsars, and some sort of image of a new aristocracy, actually, I guess, is what I'm evoking. I don't know if you have a reaction on that. Just thinking about Russian-Europe relations, I'm wondering if you have any kind of general sense of how much the currency reserves that Russia's holding is in euros versus dollars. And I did have another more specific question. Well, I don't know if you want to have at that first or if you have anything much to say about that.
Okay. Well, in terms of reserves, I mean, well, Russian government possesses approximately half a trillion of U.S. Dollars, but well, 45% in dollars, 45% in euros, and 10% in pounds and Swiss francs. So well, and there is a shift towards euros from dollar, but currently, well, if we are talking about well the formal official reserves of Russian Federation, so well, 45% versus 45%, so in dollars and euros, it's a parity. In terms of property abroad, definitely oligarchs are buying property abroad in Europe, especially everywhere. But this is becoming a very popular process, and middle class is getting involved. And middle class has been created in Russia, and it's a powerful political force now. People are trying to buy property in Bulgaria, in Montenegro, in those who are better off in UK, Germany, France, Italy, almost everywhere. So it's not just an oligarch phenomenon. So well, people are buying property. I wouldn't name Russian oligarchs a new Russian aristocracy. It's definitely not the case. They're just rich and they're buying property, but I don't think they would like to reestablish the Russian gentry influence in Europe. Maybe some people have this in mind, but it's definitely not a popular trend, in my view.
Mm-hmm. As far as buying up things, I heard a glimmer of a story about how I don't know if it's a state firm, actually controls the entire aluminum industry in Montenegro, speaking of one country you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually had a broader question as well with some specifics, and that's got to do with the period when you were in government with Yeltsin, is the what is widely called, in some circles, more in Russia than here, I guess, the looting of the Russian economy during the shock treatment. There's an underreported story of the Bank of New York Mellon, which has there's a $22.5 billion money laundering suit against it. That's kind of a RICO case. Apparently, they've just paid $14 million settlement in a related case. So at least at one level, the judicial process is going against them. But that whole era, it seems to need some kind of mention and redress. I mean, the animosity that it still holds for a lot of people, while most Americans don't even think about it. I don't know how you respond to that, but I'll wait your...
That was very interesting era and very controversial, very strange. Politically, was very inspiring. I was working as a consultant for the administration of the president regarding self-government and federalism. I was studying American federalism as an example and was trying to create some sort of framework for the Russian government to follow in order to establish some sort of federalism system in Russia. And that time that was pretty much successful. Now it's getting the Russian government is getting more centralized, but at that time it was very inspiring for me. I was never involved in any financial advice to the government that time, and I don't know about this case that you've mentioned, but definitely I totally agree. There were many abuses, and the money laundering was one of them, and and oligarchs were created at that time. Unfortunately, a lot of the shadow economy at that time was enormous. That was a very difficult time. But what Yeltsin did finally, I think, and history will remember him as a person who actually created a dam against communism. So he did everything possible not to allow a re-establishment of the Soviet regime in Russia, and that was the first and I think a very important achievement done by him. And I think secondly, he created a very good financial and economic team in the government. Of course, he lost control over oligarchs, and he entered in Chechnya, and he made a lot of mistakes. I would agree with you. So we should examine this period of Russian history in more detail, and it's going to be very interesting to do so.
Mm-hmm. Just so that it's not all the malfeasance over there, the Bank of New York has gotten $3 billion as part of the buy-in from the Department of Treasury, and they've also been picked to execute one of the programs that's supposed to convert the subprimes into something more reasonable. So if their track record in Russia is followed, maybe they'll have a different moral course here than abroad. Thanks a lot.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Dr. Alexei Novikov. He's Managing Director of Standard & Poor's Moscow Office for Russia and the CIS. He coordinates the entire range of their business activities, including credit ratings, index services. He serves as a spokesperson representing the company in the local market. He's also a frequent contributor of analytical commentary to print and electronic media. Before joining the company, he headed EA Ratings. That was Russia's first independent credit rating agency. And back as we've mentioned in the 90s, he was a consultant to the Analytical Center for the President of the Russian Federation in the area of fiscal federalism. He also was an advisor and speechwriter for President Yeltsin. And he's here visiting the campus, his visit sponsored by the folks at the Russian, East European, and Eurasian Center. And he'll be talking about Russia and the economy this afternoon at 4 o'clock. And this is at the Levis Faculty Center on the third floor. It's on West Illinois in Urbana. Anyone interested should stop by. And questions here are welcome to 333-WILO or 9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. One of the things that certainly happened in this transition from state control of the economy to the market was that, as I'm sure people know, there were some individuals in Russia who became very wealthy, and that's probably a great understatement, and that still now today, as a result of taking advantage of whatever connections people had and what they could do, there are still a class of Russians that are extremely wealthy. Mm-hmm. Now, you talked earlier about the fact that we are starting to see a middle class that's becoming politically influential, but I'm still thinking that there is a pretty big spread between the people at the very top and everybody else. Is that something that the government is, that is income inequality or that kind of spread, is that something that the government's concerned about?
Absolutely, absolutely. But, well, I think the only way to tackle this would be to grow a middle class. And while that's exactly the case, and Russian government is trying to create some sort of environment for that. Unfortunately, with a poor investment climate, with the low quality market institutions, with some difficulties of doing business in Russia, well, too many inspections, well, corruption, etc. It's a hard thing to do, and I think society itself is progressing more than the government. So, well, the middle class, I think, has been created by Russian society more than by Russian government. So, maybe despite of some negative elements of governmental policy, or rather than because of Russian government help to the middle class. But it's growing, and it's a very strong political force, I think, now. Why I'm saying so, and I think that we are facing in Russia the so-called crisis of expectations. So, well, middle class now realizes that, it needs more than just salary. It needs quality of life. It needs roads. People need good hospitals, universities, etc., etc. And this cannot be done overnight, right? Mm-hmm. Well, all those elements of the Russian quality of life landscape, they are in a sort of a mediocre state. They are not too bad, but they are not enough to satisfy growing needs of the middle class in Russia. So it's going to be a very interesting situation, especially now when you do not have an easy access to credit, and you cannot borrow a lot to invest into infrastructure, for example. So you have to create some sort of environment to attract foreign direct investments, well, investments into capital. And for that, you have to have a much better environment, business environment. So if Russian government is strong enough to go for that, that's one trajectory. If not, so we are going to face some political difficulties probably in 2 or 3 years from now.
All right, let's talk with another caller. This is someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
I thought Director Oliver Stone, made a accurate statement when he said, we do not have two wars going on. We have three wars, the two hot wars we know about, but also the war on terror, which involves surveillance, inspection of imports, both which require personnel, and finances, which are in short supply. But my statement, which I'd like you to comment on, is I am so disgusted with the Bush administration because they seem to be provoking Russia by putting anti-missiles in Poland, by training the Georgian army and supplying them with military equipment, whereas I think that Russia was buying into this international trade aspect and given more time and leaving those two offensive installments out, I think they would have bought into this international trade just as China has. We've witnessed how China used to be saber-rattling about Taiwan, and now just recently they've had a meeting, and they are improving their interdependence and their productivity, both to a profit both sides. So it's just really disgusting to me. Would you comment on that?
Well, I could comment only as a Russian citizen because, well, I'm following that, and definitely I think that, well, those two elements of American politics, well, the missiles and NATO expansion, those are two major irritators for Russian government. They take it very personally, and they really don't like this to happen. That's why I think, well, the geopolitical situation around NATO expansion and around all these missiles will be one of the key elements in the immediate future, and could be even major one of the risks that, well, financial analysts should take into account, because they could lead to some economic and financial difficulties. This is only I can say at this stage, because, well, the geopolitics and politics is not my major, but I think, well, Russian government gets very emotional when they see expansion of NATO and missile deployment in Poland. They think this is unnecessary, and seems like they are sincere saying that. So we will see. Yeah. We will see what happens next.
Mm-hmm. Again, I want to thank the caller. We're just a bit past our midpoint here, and other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Again, our guest is Alexei Novikov. He's Managing Director of Standard & Poor's Moscow Office for Russia and the CIS. And we're talking about Russia, the Russian economy. Had said some things about relations between Russia and the United States, and certainly questions are welcome. I'm just going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Certainly, at least it's my understanding that the numbers of people, that is the numbers of Russians who were investing in the Russian stock market, is really pretty small.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
For most people, and particularly people who are looking for something, some place to put their money where it's safe, what do they do with it?
They fly into quality. They buy foreign currency and put it under mattresses.
That was, I guess, what I've been reading, that particularly recently, that people have been going and they have been trading their rubles for euros or for dollars, and as we would say, I'm intrigued to hear you use the same expression. Yes, they're taking them home, and they're I don't know what they're doing with them. I'm not sure that that's particularly safe if they literally are stashing them someplace at their at their house. But it sounds like indeed that's what a lot of people are doing
at the moment. Yes, at the moment, yes, and that's pretty unfortunate. And that's why a government would like to save almost all banks, not to allow deposit runs and not to allow any panic to happen.
Are people? Is there reason for people to be concerned, particularly about the value of the ruble?
Well, logically, ruble can be devaluated at some point of time, because, well, if you look at the macroeconomic situation in Russia, if you look at the current account, so the current account is shrinking down. It's still positive. It's still very strong, but since the oil price is going down, metal prices are going down, well, and import is growing 30% a year, so current account probably will be negative at some point in 2010, and that's so. Well, the amount of money coming through the current account to Russia is going to be shrinking down. Capital account, this is a big question, because, well, we can expect only a small amount of foreign borrowings because it's very expensive. So foreign direct investments, this is our hope, but it will depend 100% upon the investment climate and doing business in Russia conditions, right? And it can be difficult for the Russian government to change the perception of the Russian investment climate immediately. So, well, the shortage of the hard currency in 2-3 years from now can be potentially a problem. And in this kind of environment, the ruble could devaluate. Not now, because, well, the Russian government keeps trying to support ruble, and we've heard many statements coming from the Russian president, from prime minister, and from minister of finance and the head of the central bank. So they wouldn't allow ruble to devaluate substantially. But logically, in 2-3 year time, it might happen. Gradually, maybe not sharply, but gradually it might happen. So people, normally at the time of crisis, they would, as we say, fly into quality. They would probably change ruble and get some hard currency while they figure out now what hard currency they would like to buy: dollar or euro, Swiss franc. I think there is some sort of logic in ruble devaluation, and it may happen.
Could you imagine ever Russia adopting the euro?
I can imagine that, but I don't think this is the goal of the Russian government. And I think the Russian government will try to create, to establish ruble as a regional currency, a regional reserve currency. So, I don't think the Russian government is going to be doing anything like switching into euros or dollars.
Do Russian banks have deposit insurance? Is that something that the Russian government does, as does the American government and a lot of other governments?
Yeah, well, the Russian government established the deposit insurance guarantee system several years ago, and that was a breakthrough in the banking reform. Unfortunately, after the assassination of the deputy chairman of the central bank, Mr. Kozlov, who was the real engine behind this system, the deposit insurance guarantee system started developing slower than many would want it to develop. But it's still developing. Instead of actually cutting off weak banks from the system at the initial stage, now almost all of them, and Russia has approximately 1,000 banks, are included in this system. And gradually being the bad ones are gradually being squeezed out, but still the number of banks is enormous, and the system should consolidate a lot and should be reformed. But it does exist, and actually the amount of money that people can get as a compensation is now approximately 700,000 rubles, which is probably 20,000 euros or $25,000. Mm-hmm. So it does exist. Whether it's going to be working or not, we will see. Mm-hmm. But it does exist.
We had talked earlier about the fact that certainly Russia's economic strength is based in natural resources, and that for a number of years, for the past few years, that has been very good for the Russian economy because oil prices have been high and metals prices have been high. And now just recently, we have seen a significant fallback in the price of oil. And I wonder how the government thinks about the fact that so much of the economy is commodity-based, based on these commodities, and that certainly there's the potential for a lot of volatility there. That it can really go up, as we've seen, but then it can really go back down. And what the government is thinking about trying to develop maybe a more diverse base for the economy.
Mm-hmm. That's true. This is one of the biggest problems. However, well, a lot of progress has been achieved recently. For example, if you look back 10 years ago, the dependency of Russian economy on oil was enormous. Probably 40% of GDP was created in oil sector. Now 16. Dramatic change, right? So, if you look at the Russian export, yes, the Russian export is being dominated by oil, gas, and mineral resources. So, it's approximately $300 billion worth of export, so 65% oil and gas, only 5% machinery and military equipment, weapons and whatever, and the approximately 30% metals, diamonds, wood, whatever resources. However, the dependency of GDP on oil and gas is shrinking down, which is a good thing. There is another aspect of dependency which actually concerns me most. The prices for energy, for gas, for example, in Russia is 10 times less than abroad, right? So, Russia sells gas at the price which is international price, right, market price, but internally it's just really nothing. And so, a lot of industries growing in Russia actually are consuming a very, very, very cheap energy. Mm-hmm. So we don't know to what extent they're going to be solvent and stable in under the scenario of international oil and gas prices. Oil prices is the same, but the gas price is dramatically cheaper. Of course, the diversification of economy is one of the most important tasks for the government. And over 10 years, a lot of good things were achieved. For the light industry grew probably 15-20%. Construction, of course, it's both good and bad, because construction can generate a lot of additional demand and supply, but at the same time we know that this is a kind of a Dutch disease issue, right? So mm-hmm. Will you invest in construction because in non-tradables, because you don't have a good quality tradable sector in Russia? But there is a progress, and I think especially the last 3 years were very good in terms of diversification. So, if Russian government continues to be conservative fiscally, if Russian government continues to be continues to think about how to change the investment climate, right? That could help a lot. If investment climate stays at the same level as it is now, diversification will not happen. Mm-hmm. Will not happen because, a lot of foreign direct investment could get into Russia, especially in high-tech sector, because, the professional standards and qualification of a number of Russian scientists and people doing applied science are very high. So, and they are relatively cheap versus European labor force or of the same sort. But and it could create a lot of demand for those people. But at the same time, we shouldn't count on diversification in machinery, for example, because the Russian labor force in this sector could be much more expensive than in India, for example, and in China. So in a number of sectors, Russian economy is not competitive at all. So especially high tech industry, I think, would be very promising, but only if the investment climate gets better.
Yeah. We have about just about 5-6 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with our guest Alexei Novikov. He's managing director of Standard & Poor's Moscow office for Russia and the CIS. We're talking about the Russian economy. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. It seems to me that ever since Russia opened up and there was a possibility for outsiders, for Americans, Europeans, people from Asia, for wherever, to invest in Russia, that people have been kind of saying the same thing, that what we need to make it attractive for investment, we need security, stability, we need a strong regulatory climate, we need transparency, all sorts of things. And that it seems that what I hear you saying is that people are still saying that those things are needed. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say no progress at all has been made. I'm sure you would say, yes, some progress has mm-hmm. been made. But why do you think it seems that has been slow? Because we have been talking about this now for a decade at least, if not more.
That's right. I think, It's a very interesting question, because some people would say that it has been slow because, well, there was no direct need for the Russian government to pay attention to this because, well, the rent-seeking behavior was very efficient, if it's possible to say in this context. The oil prices were very favorable, so, well, lots of money, and you don't need to care about anything else. And I think, well, partially this is true. So, well, the Russian economic policy normally becomes thoughtful efficient regarding, those structural reforms that are very needed only at the situation of crisis. So now is a very good time, actually. Mm-hmm. And it seems this way. Actually, I think, it's also part of the explanation could be that the Russian political system is not mature enough. So, it's not in the political agenda of many politicians. They think about different things, and they don't understand that Russia really needs structural reforms and some real fight against corruption. Culturally, corruption is not accepted. It's not like in South Asia, for example, etc. The corruption situation is much better than in a number emerging markets in Russia. It's culturally not accepted. It's not accepted culturally. People understand this is a bad thing and they have to fight it. But you have to have free press to fight corruption. So, and this is a problem. You have to have well-paid officials. It's getting less of a problem, but still a lot has to be done. You have to have judicial system, which is independent, professional and not biased, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to have better understanding of what market economy and democracy means. And some people do have this understanding and they try to actually promote this virtues. Some people do not. But if you think about Russia in the context of what happened with this country over the last century, right? So, I think it's too early to expect from Russia some solid actions in the social reform. I mean, in the society reform, and so it's too early to expect Russia to be fully democratic, fully liberal, fully market oriented. I think the market orientation is definitely there. So there is no way now to think about the Soviet past and return to the Soviet past. But a lot must be done in the area of social relationships. Democracy, liberalization, et cetera, and that will help to create a better environment.
And how long would you think that would expect? How long would you expect that to end? Another
years.
10
years.
Years? More than that?
No, I think years. Well, definitely. Well, if you say 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised, right? So if you say 50 years, definitely, it's going to be earlier than that. Mm-hmm. But, years... are needed for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in the meantime, we talked a little earlier about the fact that a lot of Russian people are concerned, at least about where things are right now, and that to the extent that they can, they've changed their rubles into dollars or euros and taken them home and stuffed them in their mattress. What could you say about how your average person is feeling right now?
Well, people are very rational. They are concerned about the economic situation. They are getting more and more concerned about the quality of political leadership that we have, and I think in the situation of crisis there will be more demand for generated by ordinary people, more demand for a mature and conservative in terms of financial and economic policy decision making, and people will start thinking more about the political dimension of the economic situation that they are getting into, rather than just thinking about, well, the amount of their salaries and, well, the sort of their immediate environment. So within not in my backyard policy attitude is going to be changing. You probably, I don't know if you know this or not, but Russian society has always been perceived as very collectivist, but I'm Russian, you cannot find more individualist society in the world than Russian. People got really, really tired of collectivism imposed on them in the Soviet times. So, well, they're trying to pursue their individual strategies. They're very individualistic, and I don't know whether this is good or bad, but they will definitely be more demanding in terms of political strategy that Russian government can offer them.
Our guest, Alexei Novikov, is Managing Director of Standard & Poor's Moscow Office for Russia and the CIS. He's here visiting, his visit sponsored by the Russian, East European, and Eurasian Center. And this afternoon at 4 o'clock, he'll be talking about the Russian economy, make some comparisons between Russia and other places, talking a little bit about the outlook for the next 5 to 10 years and the impact of the current financial crisis on Russia, and anyone interested can attend. This is this afternoon, 4 o'clock, at the Levis Faculty Center on the campus. That's on West Illinois in Urbana. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.